The moral use of power. What is power? Power is generally advantage, authority, force, wisdom, knowledge, prestige, that puts a person at an advantage over somebody else. It may be acknowledged, it may be accepted, it may be voted for, but once power is invested in a person, he has an advantage over others. He calls the shots, he formulates the policies, he follows through and insists and carries out. The powers that be are ordained of God, in the state, in the church, in the family. Now there is a moral use of that power. Man cannot exercise power only for the advantage of himself or a small coterie of friends. He has moral responsibilities. What fit in with the best good of the largest number? God never wishes anyone to take advantage over anyone else, to force his opinion, his will, over anyone else. And we can see many advantages. The rich have many advantages. The educated, the parent, the official, the lender. There are many tensions can grow up in these exercises of power. Exploitation, taking personal advantage, should never be considered as a policy by the Christian. Part number one, God's character. God is love. Love is the divine attribute and principle that makes and maintains ideal relationships. These relationships are defined in law that can be read and studied and carried out by everyone. Now this trait of God as love, this character of God, is seen in the names that God has chosen. He has revealed himself as Lord. This is Yahweh. I am that I am, the eternal, self-existent, ideal being who is the judge. He is God, Elohim, the plurality of deity, Father, Son, and Spirit, that work in concert, always have singular verbs, that possess like qualities, always have singular adjectives, who have entered into an oath, Ola, a covenant. So Elohim is the mighty covenant maker. And so his character is revealed in his being. He is all the things he is: gracious, merciful, long-suffering, good, truthful, merciful. Again, merciful. Now when we are partakers of the divine nature, through the new birth, through the indwelling spirit, through the power of God's grace, what sort of persons ought we to be? Part number two, the spirit of domination in the world. Should a Christian ever be dominant? Now I think the context in which this word is used in part number two is taking unfair advantage. The rulers of this world lord it over their subjects. The great men make the subjects feel the weight of their authority. But in Christian relationships, there should be no authoritarian dominance. Personal ambition, exploiting the disadvantaged, the wrong use of power, should never be characterized by the Christian. By the Christian husband over his wife, no dominance, no dictatorial calling of the shots. The Christian teacher over her students. The Christian administrator over the people that work for him. If we have the Spirit of Christ, then we are constrained to love and restrained from domineering. Part number three, paying back for evil. Tit for tat, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Jesus says, that's not the policy of my kingdom. We should render good for evil. we should return love for hate. We should return blessing for cursing, prayer for evil words and despiteful actions. When the principle of the kingdom of God, love, floods the heart and the mind, the policies are settled. We do not function on the world level. We function on the heaven level. Life is full of evil. There is no such thing as true justice on this earth. The Christian should therefore, by careful observation of the things in the earth, and then by turning his eyes upon Jesus, decide that he is going to act as a Christian and not react in this world. To give a very simplistic illustration, one drives down the road at night, and the car coming towards us has his brights on full. We dip our lights, then we blink our lights, and he still comes on blazing. What do? Turn our brights on too, and say, I'm going to teach him. And two fools pass, almost crashing into one another, go into total blackness. Now, we don't react. We should act. There is a man who is likely to be drunk. I know one area in California where the highway patrolmen always test the blood of those who refuse to dim their lights, and they find many drivers under the influence. When I learned that, I slow down, I pull to the side, I give the other person every berth that I possibly can. We do not pay back for evil. We do not react to evil as Christians. We plan to act as Christ acted in every circumstance. Part number four, Christ's use of power. And this, of course, is an illustration of the Christian use of power. How did Christ exercise power? Well, he shows once how he did not. He told those who were arresting him that I could call for 12 legions of angels to defend me. In fact, when he declared his name in response to his question, whom seek ye? And they had said, Jesus of Nazareth. When he responded with, I am, the glory of God, one angel passed in between. And Caiaphas and the other leaders who were there trying to arrest him fell as dead men. He was demonstrating how he could act his power, but he didn't. He didn't. He restrained. He has infinite power, but he was under control. And if you look at life and think about nature, you see that power is under control at all times. There are billions of atoms. When one atom was split, Hiroshima perished. The force, the unmeasurable force and power within an atom are all under the divine control. If this planet, going on its measured orbit, suddenly went berserk and tore its way through the galaxies, there would be chaos and destruction. But the mighty forces controlling the universe are all in perfect control. This is an attribute of the Creator. This is a quality that he would share with the true Christian who is made in his image. Power, even the power that we possess fully, should be exercised under the mighty control of the Spirit of God. And this brings us to part number five. Restraints. Rejoice not when thine enemy falleth. Let not thy heart be glad when he stumbleth. What is the principle? Internally, we should not exult at the failure of a rival. When we get a raise and somebody else doesn't get a raise, we should not exult and look down upon and disparage the other. The attitude that we should take should be one in which there is no revenge. Vengeance is a negative state of mind. We see in Amos 1, in Obadiah, that God calls down retribution on the Edomites and Moabites and Ammonites who rejoiced and exulted at the hardships and failures of the Israelites. Never does he countenance this kind of attitude. Now, if we have power, if we have authority, and we meet up with those who resist, what attitude should we take? I have encountered many times in my life a student in class who is obstreperous. He may be rude. He may be arrogant. And the temptation has crossed my mind more than once. Flunk him. But I have, thanks to the grace of God, gone out of my way carefully to read his paper, to give him the benefit of any doubt, and to give him the best grade that I can, irrespective of my feelings of him. Because I know that I've got to live with myself. And I would hate to feel that I had stomped on a student in 1950, whose whereabouts I did not know now, whose grade I could not alter, and I had to live with that myself. And thanks to the grace of God, I have no memories of having retaliated and in vengeance given a dishonest grade to an unpleasant student. This thought is one that should ever be in our minds. We have got to live with ourselves. And if we take advantage over another, if we misuse the power and authority we've got, if we grind down a seller and get a bargain, if we grind down somebody who is working for us and take advantage of them, if we grind down a tenant in a house that we are renting, give him the minimum of services, we've got to live with ourselves. And of course, this is not the loving thing to do. This is not the ideal relationship. We brush aside love and we gain some kind of sadistic, satanic, vengeful satisfaction by exercising the authority that is ours in the wrong way. Part number 5. The Christian influence at work. Now this influence, the influence of Christ in the heart and personality, must work throughout our being. Our attitudes must be merciful, forgiving, tolerant. If we have a quarrel against anyone, make up. If we have to apologize, even though we are in the right, apologize. Just as Christ forgave us before we were born, he was in the right, but he forgave us, he was generous to us, he died for us. The attitude that we take up is a reflection of our inner character. And it is our character that brings about our influence. The subconscious, the unconscious, the deliberately repressed feelings that we might have show to us and show to our fellow men and show to God the kind of person we are. We should be loving, tolerant, positive Christians, seeking by the grace of God to neutralize the negative, selfish, domineering attitudes that Satan would instill into us. So we use every advantage, every power, every piece of knowledge, every area of authority to build and bless, and thus we enter the morality of the kingdom of heaven.